and roll will never die. At least not this Halloween.
You've heard of raising spirits from the dead by incantations, right?
Yes.
I did that by playing the record backwards.
You're the bait, and they is you.
Sammy Kerr. He's a rock and roll nightmare.
I am a big fan of yours. I've got all your records.
Shut up!
This message is meant for me.
Sammy Kerr. His fans won't let him die. He won't let them live.
You should be loyal to your hero. Make it turn on you.
Or treat.
Looks like we better check out the party punch.
Starring Mark Price from Family Ties, with special guest appearances by Ozzy Osbourne and Gene Simmons of Kiss.
Come with us now, if you dare, down a rickety staircase into a dank, dark basement. What awaits? The Saturday Night Freak Show.
Wake up, sleepyheads. It's party time right here on the Saturday Night Freak Show. We do this every week, or at least we try to. My name's Colin. I'm your host. I'm surrounded by the internet radio superstars.
Brent.
Gary.
Travis.
And tonight we watched my movie, kicking off your Shocktober, Trick or Treat, the heavy metal horror movie from 1986, directed by Charles Martin Smith. If that name means anything to you, it's because he was Toad in American Graffiti as an actor, and he was also in The Untouchables as the little guy who gets killed.
Oscar Wallace.
There you go. And he has since gone on to direct other things, including Dolphin's Tale 1 and 2.
Holy moly.
Still working. And he appears in this movie as the principal, Mr. Wembley. Willoughby.
Suck it raw, Willoughby.
Yeah. Well, I love this movie, so I'm just going to start off by saying. Yeah.
Why did you make us watch it?
I love it. I saw this not on its original, probably its original video release back in 1986. You know, I had an affinity for the culture that it depicts, which is, you know, the rock and roll teenager. I mean, that was basically how old I was in high school at the time, you know, misfit, you know, nerd. And this movie spoke to me, man. It spoke to me. It's got Mark Price, who was Skippy in the old show Family Ties with Michael J. Fox, as a teenager metalhead who he idolizes a rock star named Sammy Kerr, which I think is one of the great, like, all time. Like, that's a, it's an awesome rock star name. And when Sammy dies,
I like to think that, like, when, cause Skippy's not always on Family Ties, when he goes home, this is his, like, home
life. He grows his hair out.
Yeah. Like, this is going on in, you know, like a different world, a different sitcom universe.
Right. Don't taint his childhood.
Yeah, I don't know if he's done anything. I haven't looked it up. I mean, nothing notable, nothing that I remember. Notable because
Family
I haven't
Ties
seen
was about it.
Yeah,
sorry, man. I think he's about as like his. Oh man, he's a whiny. He's a whiny actor. He's a very whiny sounding.
But isn't that why they got him for this part?
I mean, it could be.
Well, that made him sympathetic, I think.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, he's picked upon in high school. I thought like the first. You know, the opening to this movie is pretty strong. I mean, I think it works. You know, he's like, you know, you see him getting persecuted by like the jocks, which is led by Doug Savant. He was in Godzilla, the 1998 Godzilla. He was one of the military dudes. And then he was had a career on Desperate Housewives. He was like one of the.
He was also in Teen Wolf.
Was he? Get the fuck out of here.
Yeah, I looked it up. Yeah, he played Brad in Teen Wolf. I'm sure he
Holy
was a Nazi
shit.
Douchebag. Just
yeah, like, yeah, because that's just his face, right? Yeah. He's always going to be the douchebag. But yeah, they pick on this kid. They in one of the most memorable things, they steal his – they're in the locker room, and they're throwing his cassette tapes and all his clothing around, and they lock him in the gym without his towel, and all the girls are out there practicing, and they, of course, don't have cell phone cameras. They have Polaroids taking pictures of poor Eddie Weinbauer. And so his rock idol, Sammy Kerr, dies in a hotel fire, and he's given a like a studio master
studio
LP. Yeah. by Gene Simmons of Kiss, who plays the disc jockey in the town. And by playing that backwards, he's able to resurrect Sammy Kerr from the dead. Goes back to get revenge on his tormentors.
Which I wonder, okay, here's my here's my problem with this whole thing. So imagine if Nuke, I mean, because you were supposed to having to play it backwards, right? But then somehow along the line, the movie became you just had to play it.
Yeah.
And then, like,
the record would do it itself.
Yeah.
After a
while. Yeah. 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 It was very.
The spirit so, just kind of would take over.
So that's why I'm wondering if Nuke never gave it to him. Like how would Sammy Kerr's curse thing still have taken
place?
Well,
because Sammy's plan, Nuke says his plan, Sammy's idea was to play the record at midnight on Halloween. Right. Because Sammy Kerr, I mean, this is like a very, and this is what I didn't pick up on when I first saw the movie way back in the day because I was too young, I guess, or something to put it together. But, like, all of this, it's very insular. It's like Sammy Kerr went to the high school that Eddie goes to, graduated, so Eddie idolizes him. You got out, man. You're one of Rock's chosen warriors. You're going to rule the apocalypse. And so Sammy wants to play a Halloween concert there, and the PTA gets him banned. And so he wants revenge on the entire town.
He couldn't even hold that
that's
in.
That's ridiculous. I'm just saying that's ridiculous. Like, I'm going to make a pact with Satan. I am going to play that concert in my old high school. Like, that's so funny. It takes all kinds.
They'll see. I'll show them.
I mean, I too love, I've always loved what I've always deemed like the rock and roll horror movie. There's only like.
There's like five.
Yeah, there's Rock and Roll Night, Rock and Roll Nightmare, Rocktober Blood,
Black Roses.
Black Roses.
Terror on Tour.
I'm totally sure. That's a new one to me, Terror on Tour.
Well, there's a guy actually from the town we're from who was in that movie. I remember we had it at the video store I worked at. And he has like a cameo appearance, but it's like these three guys and they dress up like Kiss or something, kind of not the band Kiss, but they got the white face makeup. Huh. I can't remember if they're killing people.
Was that 80s, 70s?
Yeah, it was 80s, mid 80s.
Wasn't Monster Dog about a band that went out to a cabin to like work on an album?
Yeah, that was Alice Cooper. They shot it in like Italy or something. And it has a rock connection. Yeah, but it's not like, you know. Heavy metal
the power
horror.
Of rock is
right. Yeah, which I love. I love that stuff. It's like I'm going to kill you with the power of my rock. Well, you know,
even as the movie's starting, you get that almost the like on Motley Crue, their Shout at the Devil. That intro, you get the one where he's basically making a pact with Satan at the beginning. As the credits are rolling.
Yeah, well, this is the thing. Intro's rolling, I guess we're like you know. For those of you who weren't alive at the time, right? So this carries a certain amount of nostalgia with it because at the time there was like this, there was the satanic panic was in full fledged.
Especially when it came to heavy metal.
Well, yeah, there was like a connection there because there was this thing like at the time in the 80s, it was a very strange time, but everybody seemed to believe in small towns all across America that like Satanism was happening in like their cornfields or their forests.
And it so, was.
I mean, there's stories of that, you know, here. I'm sure there's like everywhere, you know, you listener probably, you know, you dig back far enough. But and then it, you know, and then there was cases of satanic ritual abuse and like all these daycare centers where the kids would remember, being, the daycare people like flying around on broomsticks and stuff like that, you know, all these recovered memories, which later turned out not to be true. But then there was, you know, so there was like pentagrams and stuff being, just like in towns and stuff, pentagrams being painted on, you know, walls and businesses and out in parks and stuff. And then that was linked to the music at the time, which was, you know, Motley Crue. I mean, you know, like you said, had Shout at the Devil. I mean, everybody, there seemed to be a connection between heavy metal, which now is basically just hard rock,
right?
And Satanism or some kind of occult.
Well, and at the time, I mean, Judas Priest was being sued because of a child committing suicide. His parents sued Judas Priest because their music drove him to it.
Because they said that Judas Priest had something backmasking.
Yeah.
Was something you can't do anymore, but it was, you would record a record or sorry, a band would record messages and play them backwards that you could only hear by playing, like physically taking the record on the turntable.
Led Zeppelin was the first.
Well, that was the one from the song, or Song Remains the Same, wasn't it?
It's Stairway to Heaven. If you play it backwards, it supposedly says,
give me zig, zig, zig.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, there's also, if you look it up on Wikipedia, there's like all these albums where they actually, well, see, in those, like there's backmasking where you would record something and then, you know, just play the wave backwards. And then there was the supposed satanic influence where if you take my, or what was it? Stairway to Heaven. And she's flying the stairway to heaven. You play that backwards. It says, my sweet Satan or something like that. And they're like, that means the devil is playing those artists as they're singing.
Well, they call them like warlock words. They say they're words that, since they have the magic on them, yeah, they sound whatever one way, but, and then like supposedly, like there should be no reason why they should say, make up words playing backwards, but they do.
Just yeah, because anybody can do it. I mean, you can do it and play it backwards and it sounds the same. I think, what was it? Queen had Another One Bites the Dust backwards. Yeah. Sounds like Start to Smoke Marijuana or something like that. It's like, I mean, I remember watching documentaries at the time, which were, you know, I mean, they believed that this was a legitimate phenomenon.
I mean, I do believe this movie's about the satanic panic, but I think, yeah, I think more so, I think the movie's about the whole, like, what was it? Was Wasp the first one with the album cover censored? It was Fuck Like a Beast, and it had what was it, a saw blade with Fuck Like a Beast written in blood on it or whatever the hell, you know? Yeah. So, you know, I think it was just, it was a huge time of like, I mean, think of like, okay, well, shit, I mean, almost like before the 80s, all music had to have the, like, the poetry of hiding your messages and shit like that. Then somehow, you know, they just, like, quit doing that. They were able like to just fucking start Jethro saying whatever Tull they wanted to say.
Or Led Zeppelin or, you know, I mean, there's a band called Coven out of the 70s. Yeah. You know, I mean, there's these different kind of, like, I mean, they were kind of like witchy rock, you know, stuff that gave way in the 80s once metal came around. The singers, like, adopted the persona, you know, and actually made that into their onstage theatrics, which actually in Trick or Treat, there's a video clip shown of Sammy Kerr on stage, biting a snake in half and pouring the blood all over. And that's made up of two like urban legends. One is that either Alice Cooper or Ozzy Osbourne or somebody bit the head off a live bat on stage. And then the snake is obviously Alice Cooper. You know, I mean, it's an amalgamation of like these other rock stars.
Well, and the other thing too that I always thought it kind of touched on too was Gene Simmons used to spit the blood all the time.
Right.
When he was, you know, the demon. So, and Kiss, and everybody like said 70. At the time, Kiss, you know, Gene says it stands for Keep It Simple, Stupid, but everybody back then said that it stood for Knights in Satan's Service.
Yeah.
So
supposedly rumor has it that it was because they did not meet. They are a corporate. Kiss is a corporate band. They were put together, but some people say they were put together by their satanic church. I don't know if that's a fact. I'm just saying that's out there. They are a corporate band. So they didn't like meet each other or whatever. They were put together. Be Kiss. So,
well, I remember being a kid and talking about all the music. The supposed lyrics in Stairway to Heaven was, he came to me as a child in my dreams, sweet, sweet Satan, is what it says supposedly. Now, we tried it on a reel-to-reel, playing it backwards, and if you get anything out of that, you're probably messed up to begin with. So, that's all I'm saying on that. Yeah.
You're listening for it because you believe that, like, this is corrupting my children. Mm-hmm. I mean, it became like, because this is where you got the Tipper Gore. Al Gore's wife, before he ran for president, she was famous because she headed up like some committee, like senatorial committee or house committee, something, or like concerned parents committee, where they actually got the reason that you have warning labels on your music now.
Like parental advisory.
Yeah, that's because of the Tipper Gore push. You know, it's like it was this music.
And badass. Like, that meant that this was something that, like, as a kid growing up, like, I would get the discs with, you know, parental advisory. It's like, this is going to be awesome.
Right.
Because it had
and you couldn't buy those at Walmart.
Right. Yeah.
You couldn't they always had the censored, they censored them.
But then they'd sell you an R-rated movie. It never made any sense.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Whatever. But this went back even further. I mean, if you go back to Eagles, the Hotel California, a lot of people, the rumors in the day where it was about the Hotel California, where Anton LaVey started the first Church of Satan. You know, and everybody else is like, oh, no, it's about cocaine use. And I'm like, I don't think so.
Anton LaVey's in the Astral Vinyl cover. Like, they're all the band and all these people are standing at the bottom of the hotel. And in the way, in the like, on the top of the stairs, way in the background in the dark, Anton LaVey's. Oh, yeah, dude. Rock and roll is all Satan. I'm sorry. Like,
it's true.
It kind of is true. It's very funny. I mean, I like this type of music because, you know, I grew up like thinking, you know, it's fun, you know, Dio Sabbath, it's fun. You know, the whole, like, I mean, it, you know, I'm fucking positive most of the shit's theatrics. But then you got your few people, like Led Zeppelin. They recorded, didn't they buy Aleister Crowley's house?
That's where they wrote Stairway to Heaven. So it's like,
if these guys weren't into fucking Satanism, they wouldn't,
It was at Aleister Crowley's castle.
The guy that created Satanism's fucking house.
That's Anton LaVey. Crowley was like a magician.
Well, he was a warlock.
He's the guy that created, Crowley created it, and then Anton LaVey was just like a priest or whatever. But Crowley.
Crowley's
the creator.
Yeah, but LaVey actually founded like a legitimate, like church. As a business, the Church of Satan. He's the one who published the Satanic Bible, which I remember that was like a thing at the time that you could buy a Satanic Bible like right next to a Holy Bible on like a bookstore
and they even had them in public libraries for a long time too. I don't know if they still do.
But Aleister Crowley, he wrote before the first Satanic Bible is called the Book of Law. That's the book Aleister Crowley wrote, the Book of Law. Yeah. And that's why, like, oh, dude, just Google, like, how many musicians have do as thy will, let that be the only law. And that's, like, the main thing of Satanism. There's things with Jay-Z wearing T-shirts that say that. I think it really is in that culture for some weird reason. It's weird.
Very weird.
Well, it was just kind of cool, I think, at the time that, you know, that they were able to spin that out into, I think, you know, again, this is my opinion, I think that this is the most successful of the heavy metal horror movies. I mean, obviously, it's going to be a very select few because that era has long passed. And, you know, but at the time they were trying to do these, I'm not sure which one came first.
I want to say Black Roses was like 87 or something like that, because
right after
Visual
this.
Lies was Lizzie Borden's album that really, Me Against the World was the big single that was in Black Roses. I'll talk about that later when we might wrap up. But I'm going to talk about another rock and roll movie when we wrap up. But
prime material for later.
But I mean, nothing about this film. I mean, this is totally exploiting that whole idea.
Exploiting the whole, like, parents don't understand. That's the only reason I don't like this kid, man. This kid's like, okay, I was this kid. This is why I don't like this movie, right? I was this kid. But I didn't fucking like go crying to my bed, kicking the air, like, I hate it. This is not rock
his
and
whole
roll.
World. His whole world came down. He finds out that Sammy Kurd died, and like at the beginning, he's writing like letters to Sammy Kurd.
The letter to Sammy Kurd. Like, I don't know if that is metal, man. Like, I think that kid thought he was metal.
Yeah,
kid's not metal.
No, because Sammy Kurd was like true metal, has, you know, whatever the fuck he says, like.
Well, and he wrote that real heartfelt letter that only you, I think things in my head that only you would understand.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, not quite Christian Slater and Heathers, but, you know, he does want not a little bit between that and Revenge of the Nerds is somewhere where he fell. He wanted to get revenge, but I don't think he wanted to go to that extreme with it. He wanted to do what he did to the jocks, you know, embarrass them. He didn't want to tear out their souls. He just wanted to make them look stupid for
a
minute.
That's why I don't understand this movie, right? It's like, dude, if your fucking record is talking backwards, it's like, come on, dude, get a clue. Has this guy never heard of a Bible? He's only been listening to Sammy Kerr. It's like, my record's talking? Look at me. We're going to get those bastards.
Yeah, but at that point in time for this character, that had to be like the greatest thing. Cause like now he's got a personal connection. Like it's always been a one way street. He's been writing stuff to Sammy Kerr, who's a rock star. Is like never probably even reading his fan mail or whatever. But the kid believes that like no one understands this but you, because I'm a fan of yours and I go to the school that you went to and you know what I'm talking about. No one else understands this but me and you, man. And so when he finally is talking, you know, he plays the record backwards and establishes a two-way communication, then it's like, holy crap, I've got like my own personal Sammy Kerr here, and like we're buddies, and he's telling me how I can get revenge on these.
Oh yeah, you definitely see his face light up when the album says Ragman. It calls his name, so he's really excited about that. Well, that's the other thing, too, real quick, is when it showed about Sammy Kerr's death leading up to it, when it showed him at that Senate subcommittee and he's telling them, you know, and they're like, well, would you want your children to grow up around rock and roll and rock and roll musicians? This is one of my favorite lines. Would you want your kids to grow up around politicians and politics?
Yeah.
You know,
that's, you can't legislate morality. We will bring you down, man. Yeah. We will bring you down.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying. Yeah. He was on stage all the time. Sammy Kerr lived it.
All right. See, this is the other thing I love about this movie. It's like, you know, like as far as like casting goes, maybe the lip sync, okay, could be an issue, but the guy they cast as Sammy Kerr is like there 100% in every fucking scene that he's in. He's there to do it, man.
Right.
And he's like, he was a dancer, I guess. He was on Solid Gold or something.
Yeah.
Tony Fields.
He's probably
passed away of AIDS in 1995, I believe. But I mean, like, you can tell that he's got a physicality to his like on stage antics. I mean, he's jumping around and spinning and doing all this stuff that you're like, man, this is like a fucking heavy metal show,
yeah,
right here.
Into it.
There's
yeah.
no heavy metal like performer that performs like this. Right. You know, it was like, man, it's electrifying.
Literally,
it is. Yeah, the whole film is.
I gotta say, I don't know why this kid sort of. It's like he's got a pretty good best friend, right? And then, like, as soon as. Okay, there's one scene
that guy
where
cares
like,
about him a lot.
Yeah, that guy cares about him a lot, and he don't see him at all. He's like, Sammy Kerr's not my friend, though. It's like, Jesus, dude. And then, like, okay, there's the scene where he's like, hey, girl, and she passes. But as soon as Sammy Kerr dies, that chick is in love with him. As soon as Sammy Kerr dies, she wants to suck his dick, and he just won't. Like, she's like, come to the pool party. Come to this other party, please.
But it's because the key for that is she's the only one who feels sympathy for him. They set that up in one shot. I thought that it works. She's the only one that feels sympathy for him when he's being embarrassed. So she's then the one who has to, you know, the group of jocks has sent to, like, you know, deliver this picture to the kid. And she's like, you know, maybe we can make it better. You know, it's like, why don't you go to the pool party? When he goes to the pool party, they attack him. She's not there. And then he, you know, like, you set me up. And, you know, she's like, I was late. My mom didn't get home.
Well, but if she was there, they would have all been friends. I don't get this.
Well, I think she would have protected him and stopped them.
She would have tried to be a liaison to try and, you know.
Yeah. There would have been somebody on his side.
And like I was saying to Brent during the film was that when you see that scene that you're talking about and the girls are playing volleyball and the one girl runs off, you know she's going to get a camera because she just got that look to her. Mm-hmm. And then the other girl, she's smiling. She thinks it's funny, too, until they actually take the picture and then her face changes and she realizes
she
they went
has
too
empathy
far.
For him. Yeah. And I think that's the connection that then they try to, you know, establish throughout the rest of the movie and it grows into a little romance, you know. I think it's okay.
Is it a romance?
That's what I'm saying.
Kind of. He's in love with her and she's – there's a scene – the shot that does it for me is in the – when they're in the cop car at the end and he hits the lights. He's like, I've always wanted to do that. She looks at him and that's the moment where she's like, I kind of like this guy.
Yeah, she's found a new admiration for him. Yeah, I saw that too.
Did they ever kiss?
Yeah. Well, he kisses her.
I'm sorry, the worst on-screen kiss I've ever seen in my life. The most awkward. It didn't seem like she wanted to
block it out. Maybe I blocked it out.
No, that's one. Remember, that's one where I said, well, just remember, if I don't come back, I'm going to tell all my friends I went all the way. We went all the way. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. He kisses her before he heads off in his suicide mission.
At the radio station.
To kill Sammy Kerr. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Spoiler.
Yeah.
But like for a horror movie, like nothing happens in this movie, guys. I'm so sorry.
What the hell? What are you talking about?
Okay, it's like, get revenge on your friends. He's like, I will. I'm going to set this mop bucket here. I'm going to put a chair here. He starts Wile E. Coyote-ing the fucking school.
You never played Mousetrap, did you?
Mousetrap, yeah. And then he's just like, here's some spaghetti for you. And fucking spill some spaghetti on him.
Well,
right. Like that he's not going to get his ass whipped. And he's just like, I'm going to run to the school.
So he basically, the record, Sammy Kerr from Beyond the Grave, gives him tools to like.
Dude, Back to the Future just came out, okay? They wanted bad guys to chase this guy. This is
maybe,
what Back to
maybe. But they set it up so like the attacks go. It's almost like Sammy Kerr is gaining in his strength somehow. And like
building a little at a time.
Yeah. He can talk to him a little bit. Then he can talk to him more. Then he can actually possess like the tape deck. And then he can, you know, possess the tape and all this. And he's like, it is kind of a Faustinian bargain where he's getting in further and further until there is an incident that involves somebody going to the hospital. And
that's the second thing that happens in this movie. A girl gets her ears. Well, she gets masturbated by some weird monster hand.
That's actually Sammy's tattoo. That demon. The is demon. His that's like on his shoulder.
His that's weird. Totem or something.
And you never, because that's the, is that the only time you see the Ghostbusters graphics where it's like,
with
the green. That's why I said green equals evil.
Don't get me wrong.
Yeah, green equals evil. That's an awesome scene.
There's one part I like about this movie. It's like, okay, being like, I saw this when I was 14, probably, right? So when it's like, come to the pool party, there's just this one chick with her top off. It's like, there's the slut, you know?
Yeah,
she's
but
of the school. That was a thrill for a 14-year-old. And then this, once again, the fucking
I'm the scene listen, in the car.
Oh, yeah, listen to the tape, and she's like starting to jack off or whatever the fuck she's starting to do.
Well, he is with his green glowing whatever. Well,
yeah, because that hand, I couldn't tell if that was going for panty or the knob. Well, I couldn't tell what that was doing there, yeah. But it was close either way. It could have went.
Yeah, yeah, smoke hand.
The knob.
Yeah. I was trying to self-censor.
And that's also the only time you see, like,
might be going for the radio.
Practical monster.
Yeah, which is like, dude, how does that guy not show up at least one more time in this fucking movie? They made a practical monster just for this car scene.
Yeah.
I think, wasn't he even on the back cover when the movie, or he was like on the front cover, wasn't
one
he?
Of them,
it's right
one
there, right?
No, but the video, I got the poster. That's what we're pointing at. But the video cover, I think, does have the demon.
It has the monster, just because, I mean, it looks awesome. Well, Kevin Yeager, we might want to say, did the special effects.
Yes.
Yeah, well, so, well, know, that ties into some more history about this movie. The movie was set up by Dino De Laurentiis Productions, which went bankrupt shortly thereafter. And that was where Pumpkinhead ended up getting, like, fucked in its distribution, because it was the movie that was supposed to come out, and DEG went under. Pumpkinhead had to go find different distribution. This one came out under DEG, but basically Dino De Laurentiis said, I want a new Freddy Krueger, because Freddy Krueger was hot at the time. And it's like, I want a new Freddy Krueger. We're going to do music Freddy Krueger or whatever. I think he had the title Trick or Treat, and I want Freddy Krueger. And these guys came up with the story. And it was Rhett Topham, the writer of 976 Evil, where you'll see some parallels, I think, in the stories here. But that also explains why Sammy Kerr is burned on half of his face.
It's even his story. It's Rhett Topham's story.
Yeah. So it's like he's burned on his face to emulate the Freddy Krueger. Freddy Krueger comes out of dreams. This guy comes out of stereos and speakers. And they got
pretty much anything electrical.
But dreams are forever. Heavy metal music was from like 1985 to 1988.
They didn't know
it was a limited window.
It's a tiny window.
They didn't know it when they were in it, but they hired Kevin Yeager to do
it'd be
the
like
makeup.
Disco monster is what it would be. Disco. Yeah, yeah, be like, this is going to last forever, baby.
Disco was scarier than heavy metal. I will give you that. Well, we had prom night, but anyway. Well, and the thing is, like you said, Dave Renis was looking for Freddy Krueger, and I think is still to this day looking for Freddy Krueger.
Yeah, well,
he found
Hannibal Lecter.
Yeah.
That was his franchise machine. He was very happy about that. But Kevin Yeager's in the movie briefly, cameos as the singer of the Kickers, the band that
was it the singer or the drummer?
He said it was a guitarist.
Yeah, whoever guitar. Was adjusting the first victim of the
I missed
Sammy
on both of them.
Kerr at the dance is Kevin Yeager with the really bad fright wig guy.
And that's where I'm weirded out at this movie. It's like, okay, you had Kevin Yeager, right? Kevin Yeager, right? Now, the effects in this movie are, which I do like, when his speakers are first playing, whatever, you see the weird vein things coming in the speakers. Yeah. Which, that was pretty cool. It was all right. That was all right.
It was something.
You saw the weird...
It was something.
The weird face thing and the...
The face thing.
That's what I'm saying. Well, I mean, maybe Kevin Yeager's like, can I make a muscle body? No, okay. Can do
like, some burn face.
Yeah,
get the Freddy Krueger guy to do the little burn face.
But then, like, it's like Sammy Kerr is gonna like kill all these kids at the concert. How?
With the power of his rock. Yeah,
he's gonna point his guitar at them, and their clothes are gonna disappear, or they're gonna disappear, and their clothes are gonna fall.
He sent them to the rapture.
Okay, so
this may be the thing, and maybe this
maybe
is
if
why.
He did like a Freddy Krueger lifting his shirt, and all the souls are in his stomach. Or something. Yeah, I
right?
would have bought that.
Maybe in the sequel.
Yeah,
the sequel that
just
never
wait,
happened.
Guys, we're already writing the screenplay.
Yeah, but I mean, maybe that's the thing that works against this movie is like it came out in the time of slasher films and gore effects, and there's really like no gore to speak of. There's a body count, but it's
lifting the earphone off.
That was pretty,
melted
the
ear.
Jelly
that
ears.
That was pretty good.
Jelly
yeah,
ears.
Just the,
good.
Yeah, but that's like it. I mean, there's really no. Yeah, you know, I mean, because really, like, well, at the time you were conditioned to expect in a slasher movie with a body count
arrows
be,
through necks,
some type of gore effect, and this is basically Sammy Kerr eventually comes out of the record. as the like dry run of Shocker,
yeah,
where he's an electrical being that can turn himself into electricity
very much.
And zap himself back into any speaker anywhere, come out of any speaker anywhere.
This was written by three people, and each one of those was their separate idea.
Well, Shocker hadn't come out yet. Shocker was 89.
That's actually one of the points I have written down here. It's actually Shocker and House 3, the horror show.
Oh, Oh, and what the prison? Was it prison the guy who got electrocuted?
Yeah, Max Jenke. He got electrocuted, and then he came back, and he taunted Lance Henriksen through the movie.
So they were just using electric.
Well, but those movies, this came out first, so those movies might have borrowed from them, or somebody worked on the same film, whatever. But, yeah, again, electrical beings. But, see, Sammy crossed over in a couple of different spots, which that's one of the things that does bother me about the film. I love the movie, but it's sometimes it's he can only come back through audio, but then he's using electricity. So sound waves or electricity, which one is it? Let's make up our minds. That was the only thing that bothered me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, once he's out, I think he becomes like a physical, an electrical being.
Yeah.
And then he can only come out of like once. But whenever he disappears, it's like, okay, so they stop him by cutting the power at one point in the school.
Right.
They cut the power. And so then he disappears. But then, later, so like the next time he can come out, he comes out through a speaker, you know, so he can come out through a speaker as long as his music is playing.
Okay.
But once he's out, he's physical, and then you've got him, and that ends up, well, actually, fuck, they are ripping off like Nightmare on Elm Street, like pretty heavy. So but once he's physical, like, you've got him.
Point at you and either electrocute you or make you just disappear.
At which he was vaporizing.
At which point, I would like to say, still a better Electro than Jamie Foxx.
Making him disappear. That's vaporizing is disappearing. Just the fact that the clothes fall again, it's just like, oh boy, that's funny. You know, that's when it turns a little lampoonish. Lampoon.
Well, so especially like the cops' boots.
The cops' fucking boots. I mean, maybe that's what they're going for. They like, it's funny, right? Like Freddy?
Yeah.
Yes, it's very funny like Freddy.
Yeah, the cop shoots him with a taser, and Sammy Kerr takes the taser cables and zaps the cop, and then there's a shot of his boots, and the camera pans up, and there's nobody in them.
Yeah,
and
the stun gun falls on the ground.
It's one of those things where you realize that it's like the idea of haunted music is better than the idea of the actual singer just coming back and electrocuting people.
Well, no, I agree. I would agree that the first half of this movie, I think, is stronger because it feels more occult.
Yeah, you know, it's building on this idea, the building on the story of what Sammy Kerr had done and... Yeah, all the cool stuff, all the power of rock and the...
And the talking to him through... You're talking to a spirit at that point, you know? It's like that lives on through the record.
Well, and one of the things about Sammy Kerr, to me, even back then, I always said Sammy Kerr is Ozzy Osbourne if he had started with Motley Crue instead of Black Sabbath. He's the same guy. And that's why I found it funny that they get Ozzy Osbourne to play this pastor that's complaining about the pervertedness of rock music.
That was fucking hilarious.
Yeah, that was the best, parts of the movie. And then as we're watching, I'm like, oh my God, how do English guys ever get laid? Because that whole sexy line that he's supposed to be saying from the music, it's like, let me read sound more lyrics. Unsexy than Ozzy reading
take
it.
My long steel missile down on your love channel. Deeper, deeper, you'll beg for more. Feel me,
something. That is about sex.
all I'm saying is, you know, Sharon's a trooper. That's all I'm saying.
Oh, dude, a trooper. Come on. She's living high and mighty.
Well, yeah, but I'm saying she's still got to put up
like
with
an
that.
Idiot.
I think that's also...
Ozzy, what the fuck? What are you doing? Fucking bitch.
That poor guy. I remember when I saw the Osbournes, it was like, what the hell is happening? Because Ozzy Osbourne was like the fucking Prince of Darkness in my mind, you know, like
Yeah.
You know, and then you see that show and it's like, here's this feeble old.
He became a cautionary tale.
Running around, stumbling around his house trying to figure out how to use the remotes.
Wasn't a lot of that an act, didn't they say? That he was faking it?
I don't know.
Did you hear him try and sing the national anthem at Wrigley Field?
Yeah,
he's crazy. Oh, yeah. He's all drugged up.
Yeah.
He's a fucking. He's a miracle of modern science because he shouldn't be alive based on how many drugs and shit he's done.
Yeah, it comes
across. He's done or he's doing.
Done and doing.
Yeah, either or.
He's one of those constant rehab guys, just constant.
Well, and they had, you know, Gene Simmons was in there too.
I think what makes this stand out above, again, the other rock or heavy metal movies is it has cameos from like two of the big, you know, the big acts.
I would actually say it cheapens us. Because I have always seen this movie as not as fans of this talking to me. I've always seen this as like, oh, dude, this is like what Hollywood thinks we're like. And they're like, you know, like, we'll give them Ozzy. We'll give them Gene Simmons. They'll love it.
I wanted to see that though. I mean, as the audience, I wanted to see that. It was like fucking, you know, Gene Simmons and Ozzy Osbourne in this movie. And then they're like, you know, I mean, Ozzy's in stunt casting, which I thought was hilarious. And Gene Simmons apparently, like he didn't want to have anything to do with this. And this was something that somebody signed a contract for him or whatever, agreed to on his behalf. Cause the director like said something later, you know, read some articles where he's like, you know, I got to say for Gene Simmons, like he did not want to be there. He had not agreed to this. Somebody set him up to it. But when he showed up, like he was, you know, just professional as all hell and did his thing. And in the movie, I mean, it's like he comes across like pretty good. I think.
Yeah. 86. This is after makeup, right? Because they were never seen without makeup, right?
Before
they quit makeup.
It was after Unmasked.
Movie or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah. But he was in, Gene Simmons had a little bit of a movie career because he was in a movie called Runaway with Tom Selleck where he was this evil guy who had like these little robots that ran around.
What the fuck is this movie?
Yeah, Runaway with Tom Selleck.
But what are the little robots?
They're little like spider bots because these people are dying and they don't know how the fuck they're dying. And it turns out that Gene Simmons is this evil mastermind who has these little robots that run around and they come up to you and stick you with something and poison you. And Tom Selleck is on like the Runaway squad or whatever. They go out
because they go after runaway robots.
And he hunts down like and Kirstie Alley.
Have you ever seen this?
Travis is making a
Jesus
face.
Christ.
You have to see this.
It sounds
movie.
So bizarre.
It's normal.
Like, what are you fucking talking about?
It was on Runaway? HBO all the fucking time back in the day.
Well, and Kirstie Alley's in it before she was two women.
Yeah, never heard of that.
And,
next week on the Freak Show, Runaway.
Runaway from 1980.
Well, and then he was in Wanted Dead or Alive with Rutger Hauer. He played the terrorist in that.
Yeah. So he had at least those three films. If there's anything beyond that, I'm not sure.
Like in a couple of TV shows, he's played like but he always usually plays like a tough bad guy.
Yeah.
This was the first non bad guy role.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
So,
and I think he comes off as a, you know, I mean, a capable performer from his, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I bought it.
I don't know why he was a character because, I mean, he wasn't in the second half of the movie. He was at he gave the kid the record.
Yeah, well, but maybe that has to do with he didn't want to be in the movie.
Yeah, that's what I was expecting.
Or that's just the scene, you know.
And I was thinking, based on conversations we've had in the past, I was thinking that he would be like, you know, the apprentice to, you know, like
get some more exposition out of his ass.
Yeah,
some weird shit, right?
Like he is doing this. He's working for Sammy. Yeah,
that's what I'm saying. It's like only Sammy. Like, I mean, they've got this character, Eddie, they've got that character down. This movie's like this character piece of this fucking Eddie kid, right? It's Carrie, right? It's fucking rock and roll Carrie.
It's the 80s. We've talked about it before. Yeah,
but Sammy does all the Carrie stuff.
Yeah, that's the problem. Yeah. Sammy gets to like, and you don't even give a fuck about him, right? He was this cool voice on a thing, then he shows up and he's just like,
he's just the boogeyman.
Yeah, baby.
Yeah, he's the rock and roll boogeyman.
Yeah.
He is every mother's nightmare at that point. Wow.
That'd be a better name for this movie.
Undead.
Every mother's nightmare. Dude, that should be our fucking rock. Copyright Saturday Night Freak Show. Every mother's nightmare.
2014. There you go. Well, and that it also had the little shot, you know, of Carrie in there too with the car on fire running down the road.
Christine.
I mean,
that's my problem. It's like, what with the fucking fist is in this? Sometimes he can manipulate other than he couldn't. It's like, what the
car
should have been fucking maximum overdriving all over trying to kill people.
But he had like, to turn it on, right?
Yeah, he had to turn the radio on.
But why? Oh, did he?
Or he had to tape it.
But how many people are actually playing the radio? That's what I'm saying. Why is it only chasing him?
Well, because up until they play the radio, he's the only guy who's got the tape in the tape deck.
Mm-hmm. But he takes it out. He destroys the tape at the high school. And then Sammy Kerr just follows him without any tape.
I think what Colin said earlier is he's grown in power by then. And I think by then you can't put. No, I'm saying. But he's turning on radios at the house that aren't even on.
Yeah, he destroys. Remember, he destroys the tape.
So I think he grew more powerful, and once the genie's out of the bottle.
No, okay, for the audience, we have to make a distinction here. Up until the point where we're talking about, where Sammy Kerr's jumping out of every single radio in town, that's because the radio station is playing the album at midnight. So after midnight,
right.
Sammy Kerr can come out wherever. Up until that moment, he can only take
Sammy Kerr because it seems like he can already come out.
He can only appear when somebody's playing the tape. So it's like Mark Price has the record, which Sammy Kerr comes out of, and then Mark Price destroys the record. But he had made two copies. He made one copy for himself, which was in the tape deck of his car, which is why Sammy Kerr is able to take over his car.
Oh, the white
and
tape.
Then he had the silver.
White tape and the metallic tape.
Yep.
Yep.
He had his personal copy and the silver.
The one model. For that was supposed to, like, what? I don't even know.
He was trying to kill Tim.
But that's why I don't get why he changes his plan. Why is he like, this is wrong? What do you mean?
Well, he didn't know he was going
to
kill him.
Supernatural tape to your enemy.
He wasn't trying to kill him. He was trying to nail him.
Yeah, he was trying
to nail him. He was thinking never-ending story nail him. Like, Falcor was going to, like, fly down the fucking alleyway and just get him to jump in dumpsters and shit.
Yeah.
And that's, I guess, a little bit where you could kind of call BS, because Tim had already been in the metal shop where the machine took him was going to kill him. And he stopped it. But then he still made the tape, so he knew that this was capable of killing somebody.
Yeah, I don't get that.
Because it was all part of the plan.
No, thank you. That makes a lot of sense.
Well, here's another one. Sure. So, we're talking about the logistics of the radios and when he can come in. But what about the TV? Because he reaches in twice to a television set.
Right. Oh, that's fucking awesome.
That is awesome. That was Freddy Krueger. That was welcome to prime time, bitch.
It is welcome to prime time, bitch.
He kills Ozzy Osbourne by reaching into the television and apparently giving the guy a cerebral hemorrhage. And then when he's tormenting Roger, basically like, I can kill you if you don't play my record, which I think is bullshit. He's bullshitting Roger. Like, Roger's a coward, so he does it. But he reaches in the TV there and pulls this PTA woman out into Roger's living room, which is one of the greatest fucking, because he pulls out this husk. And Roger's like, oh, God, okay, I'll play. And then the next scene is him, like, vacuuming it up so Mom's not going to see this burned up corpse.
Yeah, that's pretty weird.
Oh, that was hilarious. Well, there is a sense of humor. Like, the first half is more serious. The second half, when it's like, okay, we're going supernatural,
it really changes its
tune and becomes a humorous
thing. Really, like, I can't believe all the... I mean, I love stupid humor. You know, these guys have seen it lots. But, oh, my God, this is just like, there's boots on the ground. Get it? It's just, like, really insincere humor is what it is. Like... Freddy Krueger's funny, right? This is going to be funny, too. Yeah. Even though you're not funny, yes. All right, Bob. You got it, buddy.
Yeah, because Sammy Kerr doesn't actually crack any jokes. I mean, he's not,
No, he's serious. He deadpans it through the whole movie.
Yeah.
He wants to be that rock and roll legend. And that's when
he knows his lighting, too. All he does is lift his head back and, like...
Right.
That scene you see in the poster, he always gets back to
that guy fucking knew what he was doing and played to his strengths. Like, I know where the light is. I'm going to go over here.
I've seen the heavy metal shows. He definitely played it like a heavy rocker from back then. That's how they were on stage. You go watch those guys. They played it out.
And this is going back a little bit, but I tell you what I fucking definitely don't understand. I don't understand, like, was it right after? It's like he gave the tape to his enemy, and then I think before he found out what it did to her, that's when he comes to school looking like a complete chode.
No.
That's the lover boy look.
No, yeah, the lover boy look was before that. It was after the.
But why did he get his little sense? Thing. Yeah, because I just don't understand shopping. Why he had this sense of like.
Because the record was talking to him.
But he hits on the girl. I'm just like.
He's empowered at that point because she's like, "Are you okay?" And he's like, "Am I okay?"
Yeah.
Like the fucking guy, like he's the one who got his ass kicked. Yeah, by me.
Sammy was going to kick Tim's ass.
But it's not. I don't know. To me, I see what they're going for. I just don't like. It doesn't land at all. It's like this totally guy looks like a chode. He's got a red glove on. He's like, hey, baby, you look good.
If you look at old Loverboy videos, that's exactly Reno. He looks like Mike Reno.
Dude, this guy's dressed like a chode.
That's not heavy metal. That's not heavy metal.
Like costuming on this guy for this movie. Oh, yeah.
He's got the denim jacket and the long hair.
Well, see, you and I think
it's 1986. He's got a mullet.
It's 1986. That's how we dress.
Literally like a chode.
I have naturally curly hair. So, like, when my hair gets long, it looks like Shirley Temple curls. I sported that look because I wanted that long hair.
You're brave.
So, yeah, I didn't care. But, yeah, the same thing. I think you and I kind of had the same childhood. We were listening to that kind of music, kind of the not necessarily outcast, but just, you know, in our own little clique.
And those with kids, the stoners and the smokers in the parking lot. We listened to AC/DC and, you know, like Metallica.
Yeah, Tim and all of his friends, they're the people that made high school miserable. The only real quick, we had touched on earlier how he did the trap for the for Tim and his friends. How is it that the stoner rock and roll kid outruns the football team?
He's not a stoner. He's just a fucking nerd. He's not even a metalhead. That's true. He's a fucking nerd. He's not even a metalhead. I'm sorry, he's not.
Travis just kicked him out of all of our clubs.
Because look at his friend. His only other friend is a nerd. That kid doesn't hide the fuck who he is. Wears fucking button-up fucking whatever shirts with his glasses. He's a nerd. He's just a dork. Wait. And he's telling his kid, like, why do you care so much about it? That's what I'm saying. This kid, his friend and his example, is like, why are you so... This kid's kicking in the air about every little thing. About these people! And it's like, dude, just ignore these people, man. Be metal. Be metal. Don't just listen to metal. Be metal.
I just like that Eddie's big plan there was to set up two, like, put a chair next to a corner that they're obviously, you know, he can pull it out and they're going to trip over and have a mop bucket down the hallway. But that's after you run up two flights of stairs.
Right.
Well, he got lucky with the table.
Like Travis said, I pointed on that Back to the Future thing. They know, like, hey, dude, bad guy's running after the fucking kid. Like, you know, that's how we make a movie.
Well, he says he followed the instructions that the record gave. No. In the movie, all we hear is, all we hear in the movie is, like, Metal Machine 6-6 Crush or whatever.
Banana, make
but I'm assuming that he basically that in the record when he's listening to the record, the record tells him put something here, and he knows exactly what's going to happen.
Well, he's like let the big fish hook themselves. You are the bait or something like that. And that's what he does think. Yeah. And then like Travis said, that whole plan is right out of the Acme playbook from Looney Tunes.
I said he painted his escape.
I could just see Eddie sitting there playing the record backwards going, put the chair next to the corner, bring the mop bucket next to
the slip on the soapy water.
Well, when he's explaining it to his friend, he's like, I followed exactly what the record said. No, you didn't. Come on. I did not hear mop bucket once.
I can see Sammy Kerr, man. Sammy Kerr thought he had a fucking warrior, man. It's like, kill them. Oh, pussy. Jesus.
Exactly.
Spaghetti.
Exactly. What's like was almost line from Spawn? How come Jesus gets all the good ones? We get all the retards.
Boy, I don't know.
Right. I think that is that's all you really need to know about Sammy Kerr, like the reincarnation, is that he's sitting there going like, I wanted a fucking rock warrior. We're going to do all this stuff and just fuck, you know, I'm going to have this like ally in this. And then he gets like double crossed because, and I think, you know, you were saying that, you know, you wanted, I was going to say Skippy. What's Eddie?
Let's call him Eddie
to have an unredemptive character arc where he just goes, he's made a deal with the devil. He's got to live with it. And he goes dark. But in this movie, obviously, like at some point he makes that determination that like, I don't want to go and continue on and kill people. And so he hasn't really killed anybody. And he's like, I want to stop. And Sammy Kerr's like, we're fucking in there. We had a deal. You know,
right.
Like this is our thing. Again, this is what I want
to
do.
Satanic record. Wouldn't you know, like, I've never seen Satan. Satan's never been like, we're going to get those jerks. You know, it's usually about souls Satan. And death and stuff.
Sammy's made the deal with Satan.
Well,
but it's by proxy. Skippy has made the deal with Sammy, his idol.
Ragman.
It's that personal, again, connection. He's like, I've got my own Sammy Kerr. Sammy Kerr, my idol, is like the only friend that he's got and I've got right now.
That's what I'm saying. I think fellow podcasters have to refer back to our 976 Evil episode if you want to see the real version of this movie.
I think it's the opposite.
No way. It's the same because it's the same thing about having someone that calls you, tells you what to do. It's the fucking same movie.
It's the same writer.
That actually has like murdering his enemies and like the devil wins.
But if you remember 976 Evil, it fucks it all up in the second half by splitting the character
into three parts.
This is a more concise and I think successful version of that same story.
No, because this kid's a dumb fuck. He's a dumb fuck, at least Hoax was a nerd that craved to have as cool as his cousins. This guy's a dork. And as soon as he's like, we put someone in the hospital, this ain't good, Sammy.
Man, you know? But it's he learns something out of it. And by the end of it, he gets the girl.
He's not metal.
But he grows up.
Wait a minute. Yeah, so exactly. To be metal, you have to execute
that's
everyone
like
in your high
movie.
School.
This movie's about how you're not metal. It's not how you have to grow up, Colin. This is not rock and roll.
That's more positive, isn't it?
No, Colin. I still listen to rock and roll.
Well, again, I think that's the thing. Is he's thinking, how can I get even with him and embarrass? He just wants to embarrass them like they've embarrassed him.
Jerks.
You know, shake your fist at him, pants him, something.
But
what he didn't want to do is melt the girl's ears. You know, and put her in a coma. That wasn't what he was out to do.
Right.
No.
You know.
Yeah. And then Sammy eventually gets his whole, like, you know, by showing up at the, which I think is the centerpiece of the movie, when he shows up at the high school dance on Halloween and gets to perform on stage. Well, and it's like, here's, he's in his evidence limelight, well, performing to, like, you know, these 20, like, high school kids.
Because he gets to stick it to the man.
Yeah. And starts burning up the high school.
That's why I don't understand why this whole movie's about why would a world-renowned rock star want to play his Halloween show in his fucking high school gym?
Because it wasn't about playing the show. Yeah. It was about he wanted to show them.
That he could do what he wanted to do. And they were stopping him.
They set that up at the very beginning of the movie.
I know. It's so trivial, though. It's so true. That'd be like Michael Jackson wanting to be like, I don't know. Well, not Michael Jackson, but they kind of, I mean, they won't big enough news to fucking, you know, I mean, that's, I don't know.
I know what you're saying, but
I think to go far beyond the grave to go do like.
The key is
maybe you're not metal enough.
Yeah. No, Sammy Kerr is metal. It's Eddie that's not metal. Okay, Sammy Kerr is metal. Even if he just wants to get back at his fucking PTA or whatever the fuck this is going on.
Well, that's what he wants. That's what has always haunted him. And once he has power.
No, but wasn't the Halloween show, that was supposed to be a recent thing, right? The canceling. Yeah, that was
because he only died
thing.
A week ago.
Yeah, he died.
No,
like,
but I'm saying him wanting to play the Halloween show at his high school, that was a recent thing that was denied, right?
Yeah, but
he
wanted
to do it that Halloween. That's why he wants the record played on Halloween.
Yep. Right, but it was because when he was in high school, they wouldn't let him play, right?
No. He wanted to come back.
Yeah, he wanted to come back to his alma mater, and they said no. And so then apparently,
I'm going to kill myself.
Well, this makes it kind of flimsy. But this then is he goes
kind of being a relative term.
I want to come back and play my Halloween show, which apparently he was going to burn the place down like through normal, like natural means.
Really?
And they said no. And so then he fucking had a little satanic ritual.
That's
killed himself.
It was like his band members died, but didn't get to come back with the fucking
He got into the record somehow, and then but he knew that was going to happen. He told Nuke, play this on Halloween.
Right.
I'm going to take down the whole fucking town.
Yeah. Well, see, but he showed that.
I changed my whole wrap up because I thought that, like, in high school, he was denied being able to play at his high school.
No,
that would be so.
He was just tormented in high school like Ragman. That's what it was.
Yeah. He was an outcast in high school, made it out, became like
now
the celebrity.
Looks down at the anthill.
And then he wanted to come back to the high school and go, like, look, I fucking, you know, fucked you over and look at me now. And they said, we don't want you back because you're, you know, not safe.
They still don't want him.
And so he said, fuck you, I'm going to get you through Satan.
Well, don't you think he could have had a high school band at some point and that he could still be the, you know, just like
the courier?
Just like Skippy. And just,
no, see, this guy's metal. And he's not metal.
Well, sure.
Scammy Kerr was metal.
Well, yeah, but he was a nerd back in school.
Well, he understands that Satan's the only way to true rock glory, where Eddie wanted to pussyfoot around fucking wearing t-shirts.
This is weird because we have
you can't have Satan. You got to go at it.
It's more. But Travis is advocating that, like, this would have been more positive if he would have went Satan.
No, I'm saying this as a horror movie. It's not a horror movie if, like, it's just, like I said, that's why I like Nonsense.
All right, well, wait, one more thing on what Brent was saying. So the DJ, Nuke, knew Sammy Kerr personally in high school.
Like, they grew up together.
Yeah, because he's like, you know, this guy.
He was the Roger to his.
Yeah, maybe. You know what I mean? You can see it because he's like, he in high school, he was angry. He was always angry. He did this to himself. He started believing his own hype that he was a sub, you know, and he fucked himself over. And he, and the Nuke guy, he's trying to impart this wisdom to Eddie.
Yeah, because Eddie thinks he's
following
like the best.
The rock god.
Yeah. And so why does he give him the record?
Yeah, just to make him happy.
I don't think he knew that.
Okay.
It was just like,
I still wish,
because I don't think Sammy Kerr knows that Ragman exists, right?
Yeah.
Only Nuke is like, but well, okay, I'll fucking put this. Yeah, but like, come on.
You didn't get the letter in time?
That's what I'm seeing. Yeah. I'm seeing not seeing the, well, that letter was written the day he died.
But I'm assuming he
wrote like a bunch of other letters that the guy, you know, he's a rock star. Yeah. He just never paid attention to his
family. He's like your best friend, Ragman.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a one way street of communication.
Forever and ever.
Well, it's like Stan with Eminem, the song. Oh my God.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anybody? Nobody?
Yeah, Stan, I know what you're talking about.
Just forget that reference, folks.
I'm with you, Gary. I know what you're talking about.
The best friend, by the way, is a guy named Glenn Morgan. After this movie, he went on to become a staff writer on The X-Files.
Holy shit.
And then he directed Willard.
Holy shit.
Black Christmas, and he wrote, he's responsible for The Final Destination.
Series. Crazy.
Wow. That's him. That's
now, Crispin Glover.
They should have let him write this movie.
He did uncredited rewrites.
Did he?
Yeah.
See, early on in this film, I thought it was going to be a Final Destination type film when his tie gets caught in the shot.
Right.
And it pulls him in. I was like, oh, is
maybe
this
that
the
was
road
Glenn Morgan's down? Scene.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe.
And then he drew from that. Yeah.
Yeah. That's great.
That was the other thing. Like, when you're watching this, that opening scene is like set to music, and you know, it's nonverbal. You're seeing like the history of Eddie's torment. I'm like, how do you write that? Was that written?
That looks like it was written with dialogue because they were talking when they're passing the tape around. And shit.
Yeah, and
I
they
bet
made,
that was just
and
some
then,
cheesy
maybe.
Scene. They're like, they, we'll just do
cheesy.
A montage.
That's like one of. I think that's the strongest part of the movie. Like that it works. It tells you in a very succinct period of time. With
you're
an emotional,
sweet, sweet man.
Oh, crap.
You know, it's like, oh, I understand like this character in 10 minutes,
right?
Five minutes, whatever it is.
But it was just Carrie. It was just Carrie, slow motion. I mean, that's all. It was Carrie.
Carrie didn't have rock and roll music. Her mom wouldn't let her have it.
Yeah.
So,
well, but that's what made Carrie awesome.
Did we ever find out what happened to his mom in this?
No. She goes out
she
with Stan.
She goes out with Stan.
She goes out with Stan.
And she never comes back.
Characters are introduced into this movie with no...
Because it's not... Who cares what's happening to the mom? We gotta find...
There's a killer rock star
running around.
Also, I like the mom character because I thought she was going to be like a Nightmare on Elm Street character. Like, just does, like, you know, basically ignoring their kids. But she was actually concerned all the way through with what was happening
to Eddie.
She was
trying to connect with any kid in the audience that's like, that's your mom snooping through your record collection.
Yeah.
You know? To me, this movie's a little insincere. It's really just like throwing these things that they know, like, what do kids hate? Moms!
But Eddie respects her.
Get out of here, mom!
Eddie's like, I'm already grounded. If I sneak out, I'm going to go off the rails. I'm going to be in big trouble with my mom. Like, he's actually concerned about that, too. Yeah.
Well, that was back when kids were still kind of afraid of their parents, I guess, but that they could impose some kind of sanctions on them.
I mean, that's what I feel like, but Eddie is not met on this movie, and by the end of it, he realizes he's not met at all.
I do have one question. How can we switch seating arrangements to where I'm next to Travis once he started advocating Satanism? That's all I want to know.
Because
you're usually here.
I'm just saying, if you have a character... If you have a character that starts dealing with evil,
there should
spirits,
be no way back.
You would just. It's like is
that's
this
a
guy
different movie.
Is he 5 years old though? That's what I'm saying. If this guy listens to rock albums, listen to what he knows that this is some evil weird shit.
Because it's in there.
But he should be all about that, and this character's not.
He's got a moral center. He doesn't lose his moral center, and then that gets the better of him, and this is a positive thing. I don't understand. That's it. You're talking, it would be a different movie. I'm saying that it's legitimate. You could do that. And I think they did in 976 Evil. The same writer did it different.
Yeah, I don't think everybody that likes rock and roll has to like love Satan too. I mean, I think that like if you said that,
say if you're talking to a spirit through your records, I'm just saying at some point you'd be like, I don't like evil spirits. Right. I might not
but
do this.
But this is your buddy. I think that's the thing.
Hence the disclaimer at the beginning of Thriller, because Michael Jackson put that out, that he didn't want to be associated
with the
cult. Because
it was during that. Yeah. That's why it has that label on it, because it was made during that time.
Well, John Landis actually explains that on the Kevin Pollak chat show. That he explains about the... I wish I can actually remember the
and what you said about...
But if you want to know the story of the warning in the front of Thriller... Listen to the Landis episode of Kevin Pollak Chat Show.
Good plug.
And what you said about all rock and anybody that's into heavy metal doesn't have to love Satan.
You got to kind of have a crush on him, though. You got to be a little enamored. That's all I'm saying.
It's because it's the danger. It's the attraction of danger. You're trying to be the bad boy.
Yep.
You're in with the league with the, like, look at all this dangerous
stuff. Most of that shit wasn't satanic. Most of it's just like, look at that girl. Look at him.
Yeah. Yeah. Once they actually sang it, you know,
Too young. Yeah. Because Motley Crue went from Shout at the Devil to Too Young to Fall in Love. So, you know.
We didn't have, but now it's like it's gotten worse in some ways because, like, in Norway, there's like these fucking black metal dudes like burning churches. Like they have a ideology. Jay-Z, that's Rihanna, like, that's,
those people are satanic.
Serious.
Yeah, but well, she can't burn churches. I'm a devil worshiper.
No, but I mean, this is like a different deal. These fucking guys in Norway, I think it's Norway, right? Or Denmark. It's some like Scandinavian. Well,
they get into the metal over there.
They are serious. Yeah. Like, but they're serious.
Wasn't that where Lord
like, they are true believers.
Lord. But all I'm saying is like,
they're not. Yeah. They don't have an ideology.
There's a lot of ocean between like.
No. Rihanna and them?
Like enjoying, liking Motley Crue or GNR or whatever AC/DC, and like worshiping the devil. There's a lot of ocean between that, you know.
Yeah.
And
well, it just depends. It's one of those things. Like, okay, if to you listen, I've always thought of it this way. It's like, how is if you listen to like Christian music and you're like, oh God, I don't want to listen to, you know, music about God, whatever. But if you listen to music about Satan, but you're accepting of that, if you're accepting of that, then what are you really accepting in your life? You're making a fucking choice that this, I can accept this as part of my viewpoint. Satan is awesome. But listening to music about God, well, that's stupid and lame. And
but it's all a form of entertainment.
Well, but
it's something that...
And Satan's got the better songs. I mean, let's see. It's
catchier. No one ever said rock and roll's for God.
Well, there was Stryper. Stryper was a heavy metal Christian band.
That's why they do say, like, music is the devil's tool. That's why the devil was a fiddler. He played the pan flute. Music is there to influence your soul and your emotions or whatever.
Because it gets you to dance.
Well, and especially with guys like Ragman and like, well, I was in high school anyway. It's you're not really part of the main structure. So you listen to this music and this music empowers you because it's going to make you, you're part of us.
We're a collective.
Yeah.
Well, it's because we are Legion.
Because we are rocks. We are rocks, chosen warriors. And we will rule the apocalypse.
Yeah, we will rule the apocalypse.
Okay, while we're talking about the music, I suppose, before wrap-ups, we should shout out the music in this movie was done by a band called Fastway. Right? They did all the songs, so they basically are Sammy Kerr for the, you know, for this movie. Fastway was formed by a guy named Fast Eddie Clark, who was an ex-guitarist, I believe, from Motorhead. Motorhead. He splintered off, formed Fastway. The vocals are by a guy named Dave King. They're an Irish band. And Dave King went off to do Kathmandu or whatever. Fastway at one point actually re-recorded some of the songs from this soundtrack with their new vocalist. You can pick that up. But I don't know if they're still around. But they were in the 90s because I got like
Got the original soundtrack on CD.
Oh, yeah, because it's a goddamn classic. And unfortunately, listener, if you're trying to look up Trick or Treat because you're like, man, I fucking want to see this movie. Good luck. Because there's some kind of legal entanglement. I don't know what it is,
but Gene Simmons doesn't want his fucking face seen ever again.
Is it fucking Gene Simmons is like, I want more money, or it's Fastway.
This came out like in what, 05 on DVD? Like $5 bin?
It came out on like some unauthorized deal.
Was it unauthorized?
I think so. I mean, like, I don't know how
it works. Go to Kmart's. Check your Kmart. I always see them at Kmart's.
Still?
Sometime in my past memory, I always see these at Kmart.
It's not on Blu-ray in Germany.
It has Gene Simmons and Ozzy Osbourne on the cover. It's really bad. This fucking movie.
That's the one I've got.
$5!
Well, as of this morning, it was still on YouTube. So
yeah, you can watch it on YouTube.
Oh, you can watch it on YouTube. Yep, that'd be a safer bet. There you go.
All right, so we have mail.
Oh my God.
Nick Hammond, if you want to get in contact with us, you can get in contact with us through our Facebook page. It's facebook.com/Saturday Night Freak Show. Longtime listener, sometimes guest, Nick Hammond says, this is a long one, it's multi-part. So here we go. I'll read the whole thing and then we can address the issues. Do you think the name of this movie is misleading, as Halloween only plays a minor role in this movie and takes place in the last 20 minutes or so?
It was just totally raping.
Well, I think they had the title Trick or Treat and molded the thing. It takes place on Halloween. And there is a song called Trick or Treat on the soundtrack.
Yeah, there is. Well, that's the song he sings at the concert dance.
It's not a dance. What is it?
It's a Halloween dance.
Halloween dance.
It's a Halloween dance. Like, who ever heard of that fucking shit? I want to go to a Halloween dance.
Right. See?
I know. I've never heard of a Halloween dance. That's Hollywood bullshit.
Nick also says, how often do you think people confuse this movie with Trick or Treat because of the close title? All the time, Nick.
Only people that know. No one knows this movie. So they always think you're talking about Trick or Treat.
Yeah. When I say Trick or Treat, they're like, oh, that movie with Anna Paquin? No. He says, how weird is it seeing Ozzy clean cut in his little role playing a Bible thumper?
It's a little strange, but I think it's also, it's comedic. The comedy is funnier than the weirdness, is better than the weirdness, I should say.
Yeah, that's what I think they were going for. Is yeah. Here you've got the king of all of what we're preaching about, yeah. And now he's the pastor in this movie preaching against it. So yeah, it was hilarious. I loved it.
Fantastic.
I liked it.
It was all right.
He says, I like this movie to a point as you are mixing my favorite things of rock music and horror movies together, but I think this movie has grown into major 80s stank over the years. Plus, I would have hoped for more kills throughout the movie, not including the mass zapitation that happened in the gym.
Travis, you want to take this one?
Yeah, fuck it that on. Bullshit.
And there you have it.
Yeah, the 80s stank, it all comes off of Skippy. It's all like, it's all coming from his ass.
I think that's a bit of the fashion why you say, you know, he looks like a chode. I think it's the fact that that's what it was. That was what was in at the time.
I've seen other movies where people are those characters and they don't look like chodes. You know what I mean? It was just
He did rock.
That guy's not that character. I'm sorry. Casting. I'm sorry.
The denim jacket and all that. Okay, I could buy him.
The red shirt and the denim jacket.
And when he's in the fatigue jacket. But when he's in that lover boy, everybody's working for
looks
the weekend
outfit.
Looks
like he lost a fucking contest.
But that's the point of that. He's become empowered by this stuff. And so
he feels
becomes what he thinks is cool.
Okay, you have to tell me. I was
like, dude, you're not cool at all.
At all.
And that's the point.
When I was a kid in the 80s, you have to tell me, in 86, did anybody actually dress like the people in fucking rock concert video? Because that's what he was doing.
I did, but only on half price nights at gay bars. But other than that.
That's what I'm saying. No, like, I don't think people dress. I mean, I know women dressed like whatever their styles were.
Yeah, it was big hair and like shoulder pads and stuff. Yeah. I mean, I don't remember dudes wandering around with
the headbands on and all that. Yeah.
That's, like, that's a Hollywood made up bullshit that the culture really actually didn't do.
Yeah,
and this movie tries to do it on this character. It's like,
that if you were in LA or somewhere where this was like a thing and like, you know,
the
closer to the industry. You may actually, because like, where the fuck does that fashion come? Like the rock star glam fashion,
it's right. Just made up.
But there were people who emulated that. I mean, there were.
Well, that was the thing.
I don't think in 86 it was over by then.
Then Loverboy was taken over, so that kind of influenced that. But they
alternative killed
rock.
It. Alice in Chains, Pearl Jam,
well, grunge,
was,
yeah, grunge.
It was over
yeah.
in 89. That shit was over in 89. Yeah.
Alice Cooper's Poison, that was
But this
89.
Is the fucking leather fucking, that's a way different metal than...
Yeah, I was got to say, what, 84 to 88?
That's what I'm saying, 88 was the end of the
end
leather
of it.
Fucking
yeah.
hairspray shit.
I think Billy Idol even got a haircut at that point.
In the late 80s, they still had the big fucking hair. It was alternative, and then after alternative,
once the grunge started, it was all over.
The only thing I would say, the only thing around in 89 were just like the love ballad bullshit, you know, the
power ballads.
Yeah, the power ballad bullshit. Fucking
like your damn Yankees
crap.
And Warrant.
Yeah.
And
yeah, but I mean,
not the
Poison.
Like, yeah, not the fucking Maiden shit.
Well, yeah,
it was still around. I mean, Dio
was
still around.
It was still around. I know it was still around.
But it wasn't the push culture.
Yeah. It wasn't the thing.
Well, but was it even the push culture when we had it?
Bon Jovi came around in 86, and basically Bon Jovi became, I remember, that they were the biggest fucking band. Yeah. Like, mainstream. That was... Like, that Slippery When Wet, you were fucking issued
it's
that
like,
goddamn
wait,
record.
It's yeah. just whatever
came with your,
had.
It came with your trapper binder. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because so I don't remember a lot of people carrying backpacks. It was all the trappers. That was my
So
big
that's
thing
why on. The stuff in this, the metal stuff kind of was like the underground stuff.
Well,
it was
still there. Yeah. Because, I mean, I was that metal kid that wore the denim jacket with the patches on it. And I was about as popular as a cold sore in high school. So, I mean, it was a different outlook.
Yeah.
You know, it just, you weren't mainstream. So I you know, mainstream was Aha and all the 80s, you know, Rick Astley and all that. Uh-huh. That was what
Metallica and AC/DC, Thunderstruck. I mean, that was like 88, 90 or 80.
That's real Metallica and that's not
they're pseudo metal.
This metal really is really was never as popular as we would almost think, just because of the, I mean, this shit's like Warlock, Iron Maiden, Dio,
Halloween.
Halloween, freaking Judas Priest. Anvil, Jesus,
Anvil. I always remember my cousin walking into court with the, what was it, the heavy metal up your ass shirt on. I'm like, yeah, that's not going to go good with the judge.
No.
So,
I just think the casting is wrong on this guy. Well, we're going to start wrapping up.
Yeah, wrap up. Yeah. It's on Brent.
Oh, God.
Number
rap,
one
rap,
again.
Wrap,
oh, dude. Wrapping it up. Wrapping it up. Did you do the mailbag song?
No, we didn't. We did the mailbag.
Dang it.
We'll get that next week.
Yeah, this film is really something. see, now my wrap-up kind of changes because I was basing part of it off of the fact that I was like, okay, in Back to the Future, Marty goes up on stage and auditions for the, you know, the dance, right? So that his band can play. They're the Pinheads, but they're just too darn loud.
You're just too darn loud.
Sorry, fellas. Sorry, fellas. Hold it, fellas. You're just too darn loud. And so here I'm watching this film going, oh, yeah, well, you know, Sammy Kerr and his band was in high school. They auditioned and they weren't allowed to play either because they were too darn loud or too darn satanic.
Maybe that did happen.
I want to say it did.
We're calling them the Couriers.
The Couriers.
That was his band's name, the Couriers.
They're the Couriers.
Maybe it was the Kickers, just like that was the band that was going to be playing at the high school. And then those people thought he was better than the originals.
That makes more sense, right?
No.
Because he has, well, at least he has years of building resentment towards, like, I'll show this damn school. Nobody liked me. The kids didn't like him. The PTA didn't fucking like him, you know, so he's going to come back and he's going to rapture them all. Well, that's all well and good, but now you guys are saying that this all happened throughout, like, the course of a week. Like, he was denied going back and playing at his high school. So he kills himself in a hotel fire. Right?
That may have been accident.
That apparently only burns this Satanism. Part of his face.
Yeah, he had a satanic, he was making a deal with the devil.
Yeah.
We know this because Mark Price had a vision.
Before I start recounting the whole movie, there's things in this movie that I think could have been done better, and it would have made it a more solid story, more, you know, like you go back to it. That being said, this is the first time I've seen it. And being a product of the 80s, I mean, I think I was like 6 when it came out, but still, I remember what it was like, you know, in the 80s. I know what it was, and I know how the music was, the fashion, the style. I would say there's not that 80s stank. Sorry, Nick. I think it's a nostalgia that I mean, if you grew up, you know, myself or older, you know, so if you were growing up in the 80s, this is like right on the money for like everything, you know, I mean, it's got all those things. But again, maybe it is just a nostalgia thing. I don't know. I can't really say. I mean, I think I'd like to believe that you could show this to a kid, a product of today, but I don't know.
Well, what's the relevance to someone of today?
Bullying.
Yeah.
Just show them Carrie.
Maybe this is ripe for a remake. Possibly. Maybe.
I don't know what it would be, though.
But you see, it's weird because the whole Carrie thing, I mean, it's there, but it's not because Sammy Kerr is the Carrie character. Because like you say, Skippy doesn't want to fucking get revenge to the point where he's murdering these people and burning them alive. He just wants to nail them.
Well,
you know, his idea is they're going to trip over a chair and they're going to, you know, maybe bang their head when they slip on the
their knee.
Mop. Yeah, exactly.
Thank you, Satan.
But I mean, Carrie, she was taken over by evil, and she was fucking...
No, she wasn't taken over by evil. She had psychic power, or telekinetic power. She wasn't evil.
It was fucking evil.
It wasn't evil. She just did evil with them.
It was very evil.
So you agree with the mother, then? And Carrie, is that what you're telling me? Mother's a hero?
We're getting way off.
We're getting way off. I didn't bring up the rail
point. You gotta recommend Carrie to find out Brent's... bring it to the freak show. We'll find out.
I mean, I don't know. I can't speak for a child of today watching this, or, you know, like when I say child, like a teenager of today watching this, and I don't know if they're going to identify with it, but I certainly do. And I just want to say, I always thought like those rock and roll guys were cool in high school. Like I was intimidated to be friends with them because they were like,
we were awesome.
You know, they were there.
Wasn't that guy?
Like, I don't remember that.
He's not so much that guy. No, I agree, but I know what they're going for. So. I would recommend it. I would say check it. It's a lot of fun.
It's fun.
And it's nothing too heavy. I mean, it's, you know, it's creepy.
Okay. I was Eddie in a lot of ways, not the sentimental side, but I think that's what they were going for with this character. That's why they cast this man to play this part, because he did have that puppy dog look. He was supposed to be all metal, but he still had that soft quality to him, you know? Again, this is pre all the garbage that's going on in high schools now with the bullying and, you know, I mean, it was all still there. It just wasn't, we didn't take it to the extremes it's taken to now.
They didn't have social media.
Well, there you go. Yeah. They couldn't broadcast it, but, no, he was, you know, he idolized this rock and roller, and he thought in the end, even after he passed away, that he still was his ally and his friend. He really thought he was his friend. Like I compared it to earlier, like in the song Eminem, or of Eminem, Stan, he writes to Eminem talking about how he's his biggest fan. He thinks they're friends. And in the end, he realizes, no, you know, but that takes a dark path as to where Eddie kind of redeems himself, which we all know Travis does not agree with when it comes to making deals with Satan. There is bullshit. No coming back.
There is no coming back.
That's so, but again, you know, it was a movie that was fun. Some of the effects, you know, were cool. I did like the, you know, the green mist. That was a cool effect. I still to this day, it's one of my favorite scenes when he does the spin off of the speakers and he bows down. He comes back up and half his face is laying on the microphone. That is hilarious.
I never noticed that before.
Oh, my God. Well, I love that. Yeah, I pointed it out all the time. My daughter goes, oh, my God, that is the worst makeup I've ever seen. But there again, we were talking about how he really got into it. And I think that's it. He was just up there sweating, probably, and really getting into this performance he's putting on. And it just went and nobody noticed it until, you know, it was too late. And then now it's in the movie. But I could see I didn't really buy the romantic connection that quick between him and the girl.
Yes.
Until, like Colin said, in that part where they're driving. And I always want to do that. And she does. She has that look of admiration, that, you know, and you think she makes that connection. Do I think she wanted to marry him and have his children? Probably not. But she at least had a respect for him. I think she felt sorry for him in the beginning. And then it grew from there. His friend, Roger. Roger's one of my favorite characters because he's a coward. And like I said, from Nightbreed, you know, God, I love a coward. Because they're always fun. You can manipulate them. And that's what happened with him. And even he felt bad. He's sitting outside with, like, his head hanging down because he knew he sold out everybody in the high school and got half of them killed. You know?
Oh, yeah. That's a great moment.
Yeah.
Was that... That's when he has to go turn off the power and he's like,
let me do one thing right.
Yes.
Yeah. Because he knew he killed everybody.
Yeah. Which I'm calling bad friend on Eddie. Is that his name? Eddie?
Yeah
Ragman. Okay. Yeah. Because when Roger's going to bust open the fuse box, Sammy Kerr is paying no attention to him until he screams out the name Roger. Roger, and then Sammy turns around. So I'm calling bad friend on Eddie on that one.
Yeah.
But no, it's a lot of fun. I love the movie. I liked it, you know, back then. Again, like you, I saw it on video. I was gone when it was in theaters. But when I got back, it was one of the first movies I watched when we come back. So we'd heard all, you know, how awesome it was. Awesome. But no, it's a movie you can watch and have a lot of fun with, though.
Yes.
That's it for me.
I hate this movie.
You haven't seen Transformers Age of Extinction. That's why you're saying that. Doesn't matter. Wait, yeah. Then you will know the true meaning of suffering.
I just hate this movie. I've seen better versions of this movie. Like, I mean, 976 Evil Black Roses to me are just better versions.
You're crazy.
I'm not crazy. I'll tell you why. Black Roses starts out with like a Cthulhu start where it's fucking the Black Roses playing a concert. And as they start fucking rocking out to Lizzie Borden's Me Against the World, which is a bona fide metal fucking like teenage song that actually hit the charts. It's not this fast way shit. Bona fide.
There have been people.
The dude, the singer has a fucking like monster head, and like their music turns other kids into monsters and shit. A very Cthulhu thing that they're like metal.
I fucking hated that
movie. It's a horrible movie. I'm not saying it's not a horrible movie.
If it's is that the one where movie, Big Pussy from Sopranos gets attacked by a fucking giant drain cleaner?
It has a monster head on it.
It looks like a fucking...
that makes it all better.
Yeah, it does. Well, like it's one of the worst scenes ever. It's got special effects. It's not just like, ew, gooey ears.
This has got optical effects. There's lightning and shit.
And it's got the chick. Black Roses has the chick who's topless that starts turning into a monster in the bathroom. That was pretty cool. That was on the back cover. You don't see much of it in the movie. I'm just saying that. It's like, I don't know. This movie is just... It just falls short on every level to me. As a horror movie... as a like Carrie like type of ripoff. As a just don't like this movie. I don't like how, you know, like I said, it's one thing if you have the concept of the song and the music talking to the spirits, but then when Sammy Kerr just comes out and just like hee hee and just fucking zapping shit.
Samuel,
it would have been, that's what I'm saying. Like, Michael Jackson should have been in this movie. Like, and it should have been like, that way he would have been like, ah, as he like blew shit up. Like, you know,
he'd grab his crotch and a person would explode.
Yeah, he's kind of do that with the rest of his career with like videos, right?
I mean, that's right. That one where he blows up the car.
It's almost like real life where when I first saw, you know, this is my fucking heavy metal past, dude. When I first saw a poster for Megadeth's Peace Sells But Who's Buying, it has Vic Rattlehead, the skeleton guy, like leaning on the for sale sign with America all fucking blown up and shit like that. I was like, Megadeth, dude, what the fuck is this shit, dude?
These guys get it.
Skeleton guy, whatever. And then, I mean, in listening to Megadeth, I saw that image. I saw this fucking, this Vic Rattlehead in the apocalypse. Then I saw what Dave Mustaine looked like in a video. And I'm like, oh, God. Tight rolled pants and white Nike tennis shoes. And like, it's just like, Jesus, why can't I just have the heavy metal vision? You know, and I feel like that's how I feel about Sammy Kerr in this movie. It's like, before Sammy Kerr appears, you have this image of Sammy Kerr. He appears, it's like,
you, sir, are not a rock god.
Yeah, it's just like, I don't know. And just the idea that, like you said, horror movies, like, no one dies in this fucking movie. People disappear in this movie. Like, like, what a cheap way to kill people in a horror movie is by going zap and their empty clothes fall to the ground. What a fucking, like, Wizard of Oz, Harry Potter-esque sort of, like, deal.
Left behind.
Left behind? Yeah, it keeps rapturing, whatever. I just, especially with Kevin Yeager, someone like Kevin Yeager, it's just like, Jesus Christ, it's like, did they use him? What did they do with him?
he must have done Sammy's makeup, right?
Yeah, he rigged up all the electronic effects.
Did he do the monster?
Demon too?
Oh, yeah, sure. That thing looks brilliant. Once again, why would your most brilliant thing like not be in the movie at all? I mean, that should have, he should have turned into that fucking thing.
It's a big rubber-looking monster that they can only show for like a half a second.
It used to go on your thumb?
Yeah.
It came out of the bubble?
No, that thing was huge. It like took up the whole back seat with her.
Yeah.
They should have used that for the end or something like that.
Well, I did like the, and I, that would have been more stunt than special effects, but the scene where he's doing the sacrifice and all the faces are on fire, that was kind of cool. But.
Yeah.
No.
There was a lot of mechanical effects.
Just not for me, man. I just
lights
never.
Lights inside of stereo systems doing stuff. And,
I mean, I saw this movie right along all the other horror movies. I was all watching at the same time. This movie just like, yo, it's just not, I just don't like it. Not a good slasher movie. It's not a good horror movie. It's called Trick or Treat. It's called, it's just not a good horror movie. I appreciate the rock and roll nightmare and bullshit of it. The rock and roll, like, supernatural crap. I mean, that has a special place in my heart just because this is the music of horror movies. At least to me, you know. If you watch the end of, like, Sleepaway Camp 2, it fucking has a, you know. Like, I mean, didn't Leatherface Texas Chainsaw Massacre 3 end with, like, a hair metal? Yeah. Hair metal is just the fucking,
this is your invitation to come join Leatherface.
Yeah, dude. I mean, I love evil hair metal is just the soundtrack of 80s horror movies. So that's why rock and roll nightmare movies, I mean, none of the rock and roll nightmare movies are good. Not all of them. But I think Black Roses is my, at least the one I can like, I can think about it and have fun. But none of them are watchable. And so is this.
Ouch. Well, okay. So Travis and I have very different opinions on this type of movie, but that is the thing I think that was the appeal. It's like the mashup of horror movies and heavy metal music. I mean, it was like a match made in hell. I mean, back in the 80s, because you had like, you know, they both appeal to the exact same audience, right? It's right, your exactly. Kind of, what do you say? Not mainstream type, you know, outsiderish kind of, not rejected by society, but yeah, it's the perceived outcast of society, which, you know, it's like, this is why this movie spoke to me as a kid. I mean, Carrie is a better movie. It's a much better movie, right? Carrie is a goddamn work of art. Yeah. I will give you that, right? So you can have your work of art, but you can have your little fucking, you know, like hot dog, you
it's
know,
not
nacho.
Good enough for 976 Evil, though.
No, because 976 Evil fucks it up.
This we does just, too!
What, No, this is my wrap up.
I got it.
You already had your deal where you're saying Black Rose is so much better than this. I'm like, Black Rose is a fucking piece of shit. Rock Roll Nightmare is a fucking piece of shit. And 1976 Evil, unfortunately, is also a piece of shit.
It's better than
it. Wrong. There you go. Your final word, because I'm right here on the wrap up. Because this movie, like, crystallizes, it takes these two things, horror and metal, mashes them up. It's got like the official seal of having, you know, like your rock and roll titans in it, Gene Simmons and Ozzy Osbourne. I fucking lost my goddamn train of thought. But and it takes the Carrie thing, like I was saying, Carrie's a better movie, but I think that this does. What Brent was saying earlier, it's like, you know, that Sammy Kerr becomes gay. I'm like, I don't agree with that necessarily. It's like Sammy Kerr is the personification of Carrie's power. Like, because that's the thing that, like, where this movie makes the split and is able to redeem Eddie Weinbauer, because he's still able to retain his humanity. He recognizes that his power, you know, which is by proxy Sammy Kerr, is this evil thing. And, like, I gotta fucking stop this. And this is the thing. Like, it is a moment of maturity. He grows up. He has a character arc in this, I think. And I think that's what makes this movie work. It's like, yeah, there's a little bit of romance, but it's like, this isn't like, you know, cause I know that we've talked before, like, you know, romances in these movies always seem very forced and contrived. I'm like, but there's barely any of it here. It's like, this is the beginning of something that may or may not go anywhere. You know, these people are from two different worlds. It's like, they may not mash up at all.
It. She hounds him.
She feels guilty. She's got some guilt. So maybe she does, but it's puppy love. It's fucking, it's not adult mature love. It's teenagers, like, you know, he fancies her because she's hot and she likes him because he's a sensitive guy that's been picked on and I feel sorry for him. So, you know, where that goes from there, all they do is they have a very chaste smooch, like, maybe I'll see you again. If I do, maybe we can continue this. But otherwise, I'm going off to my fucking death. You know, I mean, this is it. So he, you know, runs off and I'm like, okay, I'm cool with that. This is not like overplayed. It's like, I don't know. I do like the cast. I think, the casting, I like, especially the guy who plays Sammy Kerr. Just, I thought, like, fucking knocked it out of the park, because, you know, it's like, this is a part that, you know, really, the movie kind of lives or dies on the Mark Price character. It's like, you got to have empathy with Weinbauer or you don't buy into this. And I like, you know, the evil Ed type character, his, like, you know, loser sidekick, who's actually probably the wisest of the people. That's the Glenn Morgan character, or Roger. But Sammy Kerr is like the one that, like, has to be, you know, the, I keep saying, like, energy or electrifying or whatever. It's a pun, unfortunately, because he is a fucking, you know, electrical thing. But, you know, I mean, like, he really does take that part, which could have been a piece of shit, and made it into something. Because, I mean, there's nothing there really in the writing. Yeah. You know, we're saying that there is like a psychology to his character, but that's still like slim. It's how he appears on the screen. And that guy looks like a fucking rock star. You know, and I'm like, it's hard to pull off, because I remember watching Queen of the Damned, right? Where, what's that fucking guy's name? The actor. I can't remember. He was like Charlize Theron's boyfriend at one point. And he was in the remake of Night Stalker. But anyway, he like got up on stage in this moment, you know, where he was playing the vampire Lestat, who was this rock star at the time. And they had a huge throng of people and he's up there performing. And I'm like, this is the worst fucking rock performance that I've ever seen in my life, because this guy doesn't know. It's like, it's a weird thing. Like, rock stars and TV journalists are like the hardest things, I think, for like actors to approximate. Like, I have never seen a convincing, like, an actor trying to play a journalist. They just don't nail it right, because journalists have a specific way of talking. Rock stars have a certain way of performing, and actors can't ever do it. It's either you get a fucking rock star in there or whatever. And this movie was kind of clever. They're like, well, we're going to get a guy who's a fucking dancer and just have him, like, show up and do all this stuff. And maybe he can, you know, we'll play the song for him in the morning and, you know, he'll be able to lip sync to it. So that's maybe, you know,
at least half
dodgy. But I don't think that, you know, it doesn't matter as much as like what he's actually doing. And that guy, like, was running around and doing all this crazy shit. And it's like, I don't know. Sammy Kerr has gone on, I think, in my mind, to become like this, you know, because again, I live on an online, or I'm looking him up like every Halloween. I'm like, yeah, Halloween equals Sammy Kerr. You know, Michael Myers obviously is at the top, but there's like every Halloween, it's like, remember Trick or Treat, man. You go back and you look, and there's all these like sites dedicated. There's like shit about Sammy Kerr on metal, like archives or whatever, yeah, from the 80s. Like, if you were a kid now and you looked up the name Sammy Kerr, they treat him like he was a real dude. Like, here's when he was born. Here's when he died at this fucking high school thing. You know, like, there are legitimate biographical entries for him. So that, I think, is just awesome. So, like, this obscure little movie,
the character has kind
of, yeah, the character is bigger than the movie in some way. Like, you know, the ghost of Sammy Kerr still is out there, the legend of Sammy Kerr, because it's a fucking cool name. But yeah, I don't know. Yeah. I like it also. And I, you know, I think, you know, a lot of it is my nostalgia for it, you know, coming from the 80s. I grant you that. Yes. A lot of it. So it's like, could I recommend it to a kid of today? Probably not. But I think, like, if you're from that era and you missed it, then you should go back, and it's going to fucking take you right back to them again. You're going to know the people. You're going to know the time. And I think, like, if you missed it, you owe it to yourself to go check out Trick or Treat. And that's my wrap up. Sorry, it was very long. Next week, Sean is back, and he's told me this. He's bringing Halloween, The Curse of Michael Myers, the producer's cut, which is out on the new Blu-ray from Shout Factory. It's Halloween 6. The producer's cut. So we're going to find out, because this one has never apparently been made commercially available. It's always been like a bootleg cut for years. We're going to find out if it improves the movie, because I think the movie was kind of crap. Maybe the producer's cut's better. We're going to find out next week on the Saturday Night Freak Show podcast.
That sounds like a sequel.
And that's all.